Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hornsby.
Sunday the 19th of November, finally back home after our road trip. Dublin and Rwanda, the land of a thousand hills. What a place, Kev. Probably one of the most impressive trips I've been on. Lovely people, welcoming, friendly, kind, stunning scenery. Great food as well. Crazy we were there on the day that the Supreme Court ruled that Rwanda asylum policy was unlawful. What do you make of it? Give us your sort of sum up Rwanda in a few words.
Would you rather live on a council estate in London, Birmingham, Burnley, Liverpool, Manchester,
Bradford,
Glasgow, Edinburgh, or get sent to Rwanda? What would you rather be do?
There's absolutely no contest for me. I mean, it's just, all right, there's absolute poverty there. Don't get me wrong. You can see the poverty, but it's a country that is recovering from a very, very a devastating set of events in 1994. And we'll come on to the Genocide Museum later on, that, just what that, how powerful that was. But it's recovering, it's rebuilding. It's a country that's, the people have been hurt, it's been bruised, but it's back on the road to recovery. And you can see that from the investment. I mean, the roads there, phenomenal compared to Zambia. There's infrastructure, there's, you know, the roads, obviously they're very busy. It's a very, very, very populated or populous country. I think it's 12 million people living there in its size. It's not a massive country, is it, in comparative to the likes of the Congo and Tanzania that border it. But what a place. I mean, the scenery, I've never seen mountains and scenery quite like that in my life.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful place. Absolutely beautiful place. I can't say it particularly reminds me of anywhere because it's just beautiful. It's unique.
Very hilly, as you say.
The people are very, very polite and very, very humble and inquisitive as well, you know. They want foreigners to go there, you know, they really do. And if you want a tourist destination to go and do some amazing things, it sounds crazy, but go and visit Rwanda because it's amazing. It is amazing. You can go and see the Big Five, do a safari.
Yep.
The gorillas, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about, but was just mind-blowing. It was amazing. And just literally epic scenery. It's just a beautiful place. Obviously, it's very, very mineral-rich because of all of those things. It's had volcanoes on one border and flat savanna on another border and quite obviously probably glacial sort of stuff in the middle in a plateau. So, yeah, I think geologically it's incredibly interesting as well, but... Yeah, we had a great time. Obviously, we were in Ireland. I would encourage you to listen to last week's Sunday Roast if you haven't already, if you're listening to this one, because honestly, another absolutely mammoth situation and discovery there in Ireland. I mean, it's beyond comparison, I think, in the Western world in terms of gold discovery. So, yeah, and then we moved on to Rwanda. We flew there on Saturday night, got there Sunday morning. And we went through different stages, and you'll hear those in the voice notes. First day, we went to see an artisanal miner, and that was an experience. Let's just put it that way. Like, could we fall down a hole at any point? I think yes.
A lot of youngsters working there, and there's also a lot of them working with effectively just, you know, sandals on, flip flops.
I wouldn't say youngsters, but I think it was probably 16 years old and upwards, basically.
Yeah, young comparative to the Western world. But let's get a few facts about Rwanda. We've obviously alluded to the densely populated. We've talked a little bit about the gorillas and the wildlife, and we'll come on to that more later. Kigali, the capital city, is known for its cleanliness. The country has a nationwide ban on plastic bags, which was obviously we didn't see one in our time there. And also holds a monthly community cleanup day known as Umuganda. And it does strike you, you know, when you look at the sidewalks, it puts Britain to shame. You know, you look out the side of a road in the UK and it's littered with just bags and waste and crisp packets and plastic bottles. You don't see any of that there. Do not see it. It's just clean sidewalks. Coffee and tea economy. I've got a cup of tea in my hand. We obviously brought a few back, ginger and lemon, ginger tea. And Rwanda's economy heavily relies on agriculture, with coffee and tea being the main cash crops and biggest exports. This is phenomenal. How would you describe the first sip you had of the ginger tea, Kev? Because it pretty much blows your head off, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was a rocket fuel, wasn't it? It was like rocket fuel, I think, is the best way to explain it. It's like
It's like a heat, but clearing sensation as well. Because I mean, the ginger is almost like,
I mean, it's a spice at the end of the day, so it should blow your mind, yeah, shouldn't it? Just like a chili. But yeah, and some of the coffees. I mean, I'm an absolute coffee nut. I've always been into coffee, and I sort of, you know, have two or three strong cups a day. But when we were traveling back from the lithium site, we stopped. In fact, the way in, we stopped in, didn't we, for a coffee and a pastry in the morning, and then in the afternoon we stopped for some lunch. And I had some of the best coffee I've ever had in my life. And the Rwandan coffee is extremely good. So for your coffee lovers, if anyone wants to visit, you will not be disappointed by the coffee and the tea. There's also the genocide memorial. Obviously, Rwanda experienced a tragic genocide in 1994. There's approximately 1 million people killed over a period of about 3 months. The country since then has made significant strides in reconciliation and rebuilding, as we just alluded to earlier. And we went to see the memorial and education center on the Sunday. And I'll tell you what, there was not a dry eye in the house at the end of it. When I don't think anybody can really explain what happened, because it's just absolute madness. I mean, genocide, it cannot really be explained, can it? But at the point at the end of it, when you go into the children's memorial, I mean, as a parent, it was just absolutely devastating to read some of the accounts and the last words. So not something you can kind of revel in, but obviously it's something that is never going to go away. And you know, it has to be remembered so that we don't allow tragedies to happen. Sadly, it's happening right now in parts of the world, but it shouldn't be happening. We talked about the rapid development, and you summed it up very well, the way that they're making strides through the country to kind of, like, with business and the mining assets and the cassiterite and the tantalum, and also obviously the potential of lithium, which we'll come on to as we talk to Charles and Simon later on. So the guerrilla trek, when we first mentioned going off to see, Rwanda is one of the very few countries in Africa, in fact, a few countries in the world, where you can physically go and visit the guerrillas in a mountain in their natural habitat. And actually almost get up relatively close to them, because obviously there is a distance you have to kind of, like, respect. Although Kev will probably tell you later on how he experienced one falling into him, and I'll let him explain it later on. But yeah, phenomenal. At first we were like, should we do it, should we not? But I'm really super glad. It's probably one of the best things I've ever done from a life experience. At the moment when we saw the silverback come out, in fact, you were in front of me, you were behind the ranger who had a machete behind his back, who sort of cleared a way out. But what did you make of it? For me, it was bucket list stuff, and it was probably, as I say, one of the best experiences in my life.
Yeah, it's hard really to put it into words. I mean, you have to go and do it, really. I think that I can't really say any more. Go and do it. I mean, I wouldn't have done it if you hadn't have encouraged me to do it, because I was sort of like, really, is it going to be that good? It was very good. It really was very good. And some people were like very uptight about it while we were around the gorillas, but I was incredibly calm. They were just behaving like a family. And you know, as I said, when the big silverback, who was the sort of the deputy alpha male, if you like, stood up and went, in other words, he wanted to walk past us.
He's like, out of my way.
So everybody scampers back, and I don't know whether it was, I just didn't really move. And then the ward or the guard guy says, just take a step back there. So I stepped back, and he literally just walked about, you know, 50 centimeters away from me and just walked along and went into the bush. And yeah, it was surreal. I don't really think I get it yet, even, to be honest.
I mean, I was actually WhatsApping the missus at that point, because I looked at the phone and I had like 4G signal. It amazes me, in Rwanda, wherever we were, we had some sort of signal, like data, mobile data. So anyway, I pressed the button. I thought, it's not going to connect. Sure enough, she answered, and I was like, had the camera on the silverback, and he got up at exactly that time, and he should have seen her face in the car. I think she recorded it, and she's like, her face, he's like, hands on her face, can't look, because it's like, we're going to get mauled or beaten. I mean, as you say, a lot of people have said to me, fair play, brave for doing it, because they are, at the end of the day, she said, they're wild animals. You don't know how they're going to behave, and one swipe of that silverback is going to break you in two, isn't he? There's no argument. It's just the power of them when they get up. They're probably, as you summed it up, probably twice the width of you, twice the size when they're stood up. Phenomenal.
No, if they're aggressive and they come after you dead or very badly injured, end of story, you know. But the scenario is, they're vegetarians. They're not interested in meat. They're not going to attack you for any other reason other than you stepping on their territory or their toes.
Threat to them, their offspring.
Yeah, but the scenario is that there was less than 50 of these guys about 20 years ago, I think, and now there is 600 on the Rwandan side, and maybe a maximum of 1,000 worldwide. Yep. Because these mountains basically go Rwanda, DCR Congo and Uganda. Now, they don't know how many is in DCR Congo, but basically, if you've ever seen a gorilla in a zoo, then it's probably come from Congo, okay? Sure. Because they kill their parents so that they can get the baby, and then the baby goes off to a zoo somewhere in the world. And that's why they were critically endangered. In Uganda, there is conservation, but in Rwanda, they've taken it to a whole new level. Ellen DeGeneres has a center there. She's big into it. And, you know, the politicians in Rwanda make a big deal of it. Every time a baby is born, they have a celebration and a naming ceremony. So these are not in any way sort of not wild, but they're probably less wild than they would be if
I mean,
people weren't coming to look after.
There's about 22 families that they've visited pretty much on a daily basis, aren't they, in the high season. So they're always used to having a few. I think we had about an hour with them, roughly 45 minutes to an hour, let's say. And that was plenty enough. They were playing. We were lucky because it was not raining. So in fact, it was the perfect trekking weather, wasn't it? We got about an hour's trek in and we saw them as they came out and they were just playing around. Tell them the story. So two of the young were playing, weren't they, having a bit, beating like birth, almost like beach. You go up to them and they whack each other just to sort of say, come on, play with me. Just explain what happened.
So two of the juveniles were having a good scrap with each other, you know, and sort of rolling about, and they were 3 or 4 meters from me, but we were on a slight incline, and the next minute they go rumble tumble, and they end up on my feet, and I'm like, I was videoing something but not them. And then I put my phone down as they were coming rolling towards me to take in the moment. And they both then stood up after they rumbled. And the one that was closest to me didn't even look at me and basically swung his left arm around as he was getting up and leaving and just whacked my calf, almost as if to say, what the bloody hell are you doing here, you know? And I was in hysterics. I was just laughing my head off. And the ranger were laughing their heads off as well. He says, oh, you're special. The gorillas have touched you. And that was the end of the story. They don't want us to put pictures of that sort of stuff on social media because, you know, conservation-wise, we want them to be in the wild and we don't want to do it. We certainly didn't go towards them in any way, shape or form. Everyone else was backing away. I just stood my ground and they rolled into me. So, yeah, incredible experience. And yeah, I was asking when can children go, because it definitely is a thing. And they've got to be 15 years old, so mine are 8 and 6 now. So I'll do it again in 10 years, I think, and take them back. It's an incredible experience for them to witness as well.
Okay. Well, let's move on to a little bit of news. Not going to dwell too long because it's going to be a long show. So we had the politics week we've already alluded to. Suella Braverman has finally been sacked. That didn't really come as any surprise, I don't think. Quite a lot of things she said. Maybe they had a heads up about the Supreme Court. I just don't know. And then we also had David Cameron, and this was a shock. We were both sort of a bit flabbergasted by it. I think most people were kind of, it was a bit of a curveball. But David Cameron, the former UK Prime Minister, made a surprising comeback as the new Foreign Secretary in Rishi Sunak's cabinet reshuffle. Despite his past disagreements with Sunak, Lord Cameron, who will now join the House of Lords as a life peer, expressed his commitment to public service and support for Sunak's leadership. His return follows the controversial sacking of Suella Braverman as Home Secretary. Cameron, who stepped down as an MP in 2016, will receive a Secretary of State salary in Lords, but will forgo his Prime Ministerial allowance. The reshuffle, which Sunak claims builds a united team for the country's long-term needs, has drawn criticism from Labour's Pat McFadden, who views it as a desperate move by Sunak to distance from past Tory failings. What do you make of Cameron coming back?
Yeah, I have no comment. It's bizarre. Well, I think it's a masterstroke from Sunak, to be honest. I think he's protecting himself from Bojo stepping in, because basically Bojo, I think Cameron's going to outrank Bojo, and that's the reality of the situation. So politics will... and Labour at the same time imploding. So I think we're, could be interesting next year. Looks like interest rates have peaked.
It's funny because you've got Cameron on one side for Sunak, and then you've got Tony Blair now acting as a Middle East broker for Starmer. I don't know if you saw that. So it's like they're bringing in the old guns again, aren't they?
Yeah, the big guns. So it could be a race-off between Tony Blair and Cameron for Prime Minister next year. Let's say,
stranger things have happened. Sure. All right. Well, I mean, so before we delve deeper, obviously, we've already alluded to why we've been in Rwanda, visiting Aterian. Aterian is an LSE-listed exploration development company with a diversified African portfolio of critical and strategic metals minerals projects. And as I just said, before we delve deeper into Aterian, have a listen to some of our audio diary clips from the last week to give you an idea of what we got up to.
Okay, so on to our next trip now. We've just arrived this morning into Kigali, Rwanda. Just heading out for some dinner. What are your first impressions of Rwanda, of Kigali, Kev?
Yeah, it's a very nice place, very civilized. The hotel is very nice. Very beautiful roads, very beautiful places so far what we've seen. We're heading off to one of the sites tomorrow. So yeah, all very, very interesting so far. Well, here we are in Kigali. We've just come now to the Aterian office in Kigali, which obviously was the East Inc. Co. Building that they use. Yes, it is pouring down to make you feel better. So though the weather's nice, was nice yesterday, it looks like it's gonna rain, hopefully not all day. So we're here. So Charles, give us your views on this place and what we're gonna be doing today.
Yeah, we're here at the Comptoir, and that's a word that basically means it's where we gather the ore materials. It's for the trading. As we've tried to explain, we are now implementing a new strategy with respect to the trading. And I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be here with Maurice, who's our technical guy. Godfrey, who does sales, CRM, those types of relationship with the artisanal mining community. And, of course, with the country manager, Asman. And I'm going to try to show you guys what we're trying to achieve and head out to meet with a artisanal mining company today so you and all your guests can get a better understanding of the opportunities here on the ground. And that artisanal is not necessarily a bad word. It just means kind of, I guess, small scale, and how we're looking to help these people and to improve productivity and see if we can make some margin from that.
Anything to add, Osman?
Thank you. We are happy to receive the big delegation from London. We will take you through all the operations today, especially what you have been preparing the Comptoir to be run. We made the first trial of the facility, which was very good, but we did some few improvements of which we will also test together with you tomorrow. Yeah, we are happy. Thank you for coming out, and we are looking forward to cooperate with you for these few days you are here to show you around for everything we've achieved for the last few months. Thank you.
What it shows us is it's not Charles telling us that he's going to do some buying and selling of stuff in Rwanda. There's a team here. We've got an accountant. We've got the office staff. So we have a structure here that's going to propose stuff and move stuff forward as, I suppose, more up-to-date ways of mining are going to hopefully be implemented, which will help the artisanal miners and also help Aterian at the same time. So we look forward to seeing it and witnessing it ourselves.
So here we are at the Uplift facility, Charles. Do you want to just talk us through exactly what we're seeing here in this facility?
Yeah, what we do here is we collect the material, we weigh it. The guys look to then separate it and uplift it so that it meets the specifications for any off-taker. What Maurice is going to do now is he's going to put a sample in of some of the larger type material. We just recently had some soundproofing put in so that we could meet environmental noise levels and make sure we're on the right side, let's say, of environmental regulation. And so he's working on that now.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to hear now the machine's about to go on for the crushing. So, yeah, we've got the guy in there is about to pour all the rocks.
And that's the machine.
Hammer mill.
The input for the hammer crusher is about 15 millimeters. And what goes out are a mixture of different sizes that are less than 15 millimeters, of which you have to screen. Some of them will go to the roller mill, and others will directly go to the magnetic separator.
We are now undergoing the screening. After the screening, we'll see what we are remaining with, because those very fine will immediately go to the next magnetic separator.
So we're here at the magnetic separator, and what you can tell is that you have a machine with relatively large magnets. On top of that, you have a pulley system, and what's happening is the material is then going across the magnetics, and given the different magnetic properties of different elements, we're able to segregate or separate them from other waste material. In particular, we're looking to remove iron and separate cassiterite or tin material from coltan or tantalite and tantalum material.
So we're now seeing the shake table.
Yeah, the shaking table, we use it to separate materials with cassiterite when cassiterite is mixed with sand. So that in wet material, it can separate the sand from the cassiterite material.
So here we are on site at the Kigali Artisanal Mining Facility. Do you want to just talk us through what we're seeing here, Charles?
Yeah, we just walked into their main shaft, and you can see where they drop down to about 20 meters. They're following a vein, and this is primarily cassiterite. There's some coltan byproduct, but majority of this is, I'd say, 90% cassiterite. What we've noticed so far is that you can see the difference in terms of the nature of their safety equipment and the preparation and the very, let's call it, artisanal type of working, where they're basically just following the vein.
Sure.
They brought up a load for us to inspect, and what you see there is that you can pull out the cassiterite by hand. You can see the quartz mixed with the tin product. It's very, very rich, but it's in it by its very nature, it's leading them just to mine the vein.
Sure.
And what we know is that there's a lot more to be mined. There's a lot more productivity that can be had from this. We can help them with safety. We can help them with mine mapping. We can help them with geology to follow on past the veins to continue to be productive. And so we're looking to cooperate with these guys in that particular area.
Yeah, and the idea presumably being that this is sort of company you will provide your trading on with the raw resources
exactly.
You need.
Exactly. We cooperate with them. We provide them with some small capital equipment. They increase productivity, and in exchange for that, they sell to us, and they also provide us with product as kind of a lease payment for that assistance in capital equipment.
Okay, so here we are at the top of HCK1, which is about a three-hour drive south of Kigali, the capital. And this, as you probably will know, is the lithium assets. They've also got HCK2 as well, which we're looking at just across the valley there. We're at 1780 meters, which is obviously extremely high, 1800 meters, extremely high altitude, a bit of a trek up here. And what the views are absolutely, first thing that hits you is Kev's breathing issues. Have you got your respirator?
Yeah, so, we've just been given a tour by Rio and the crews that they've appointed from South Africa to come up here. So there's 16 geologists currently swarming around this target,
mapping all the areas out. To just remind you that this is obviously the joint venture with Rio Tinto and their commitment to spend something in the region of $7.5 million in this asset
to get the first 25%, I think that is, isn't it?
Yeah,
and then they're talking very positively that drilling program's going to happen next year. It's not like we have still to decide. It seems to be it's planned, it's in the plan. So something crazy like 45,000 meters, I think, is going to be drilled from what we were told yesterday. So, not a huge amount to see, but the geologists are quite excited about finding the pegmatites, which in turn have the spodumene within them, and then in turn this has the lithium within it. So, from the trenching before that's been done by Aterian and other work, we know there's lithium here, but it's whether it's in economic quantities. But I think Rio wouldn't be chucking money at it in a new country this quickly
if they didn't already think it was here.
So. Yeah, I mean, we obviously went to the Rio offices yesterday, didn't we? And we met Sandy and Tim, the geologist, and they seemed very keen on getting the drill bit turning, didn't they? They're doing all the trenching, they've done the mapping right now, and they're expecting in sort of Q1 of next year to actually getting the drill bit turning up here on their identified pegmatite zones, because there's been Aterian identified 19 pegmatite zones on HCK1, and obviously they're just... Rio are working through those and also identifying their own zones or any additional ones. So all looks very good. Obviously very high altitude, rough terrain, but they can get around those challenges.
Yeah, and if there's lithium in this, they're just going to basically be digging the hill up. Just going to be taking the whole hill away, which really means the stripping. It's not any stripping at all. You're really just taking the whole hill. Or I don't think it's a mountain. It's a hill, but it's maybe 400 metres tall. And probably would contain 30, 40 million tonnes on its own without any of the other targets. So, yeah, very interesting times. We'd just like to thank you for showing us round.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure.
No problems. As you can hear, a South African Cape Town accent here. just showed us round the mountain here. So, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Thanks. Okay, so here we are, bright and early on a Thursday morning. A trip to Rwanda wouldn't be complete without a visit to the mountain gorillas. How are you feeling this morning, Kev, bright and early?
Yeah, I'm still asleep. I had to wake up 3:45 to get up, which UK time is 2:45. Yeah, the views we've seen on the way up here have been magnificent, is all I can say.
Breathtaking.
Mist in the valleys as we climb the mountains, and we can see the volcanoes now.
Yeah, there's a home of around five volcanoes, and the idea is we're going to go and trek for a couple of hours when we get to the sort of the camp, and then visit a family of gorillas and visit them in their natural habitat.
Yeah, welcome to mountain home of mountain gorillas in Musanze City. You're welcome.
So here we are with the gorillas. What are your first thoughts of being in their natural habitat?
Yeah, it's a bit surreal, to be honest.
Seeing the silverback come out initially.
Yeah, and it's like twice my size, maybe three times my size, not even height. Just monstrous animal, but very calm and peaceful, most of them. The babies are running around like babies, and the youth are slapping their chests, and yeah. Wow, definitely an experience to have. If you're that way inclined, you should get it. It's amazing.
So it's more like a moment of serenity, isn't it? It's just serene and calm. Look directly now at the silverback, who's just
scratching
his armpit, chilled out. I don't think there's anywhere else in the world you can do this, really, because even the Ugandans come to Rwanda, don't they, to see them, as we saw this morning.
Yeah, look at the muscles on his chest. He's just ripped. Yeah. 200 kilograms of pure muscle.
So some interesting snippets there you just heard. Let's introduce our first guest this week, Charles Bray and Simon Rollison from Aterian. Welcome, gents.
All right.
So let's start. I want to just start by obviously personally saying a massive thanks to you for having us this last week and being a great host. I'm sure I speak from both of us when I say that we had an incredible time, and you've just heard about some of the things that we got up to in Rwanda. So let's start with you, Charles, talk the Rwandan operations before we move on to Morocco with Simon. Can you just give the listeners a breakdown of what you've achieved to date in Rwanda with the trading arm of the company and obviously the various licenses, including the HCK JV with Rio Tinto?
Yeah, I guess the thing to start with is Rio. I'm very pleased that you had the opportunity to meet with them. We have a very excellent partnership there, and that's trying to be as open as I can without, being too familiar, because this is relatively new and we know it's new, but we're guarding it because we've really valued that partnership. And so far it's been advancing at a very good pace. Our teams are working well with their teams, and what we're finding is that they're just really good people to work with. So beyond that as well, they've been excellent with the local stakeholders. So in terms of dealing with RMB, in terms of local government, ESG, one of the things I'm sure you must have heard was them discussing, they participated in the local community effort, the tree planting and getting involved with some of the local schools. And all of that's very important to us. So we're very, very pleased with the partnership. And from a more business standpoint, we're really impressed at the speed of the exploration effort. So we're looking forward to seeing where that takes us over the next few months. With respect to trading, while we had admittedly lost a little bit of focus on that while we were completing the due diligence, the trading facility is now completed. We're happy to show you that. The soundproofing is now in, so we can actually execute on upgrading material. We were able to show you some of the artisanal workings and partnerships that we're looking to have tie-ins with. We're going to utilize them and leverage that with trade finance to get the trading up and running. And I'm taking personal responsibility for that and looking forward to updating the market. And ideally by year end, or I should say that's by the start of the new year, we're anticipating having trading up and running and generating revenues to support our operations in Rwanda, but as well here in London.
Yeah, it was very interesting. You obviously, everybody's listened to some of the voice clips by now in the interviews that we had with the guys who are going to be running that project in the Comptoir, is it? Which I think is just a fancy name for a place that you do things in.
Warehouse, that's another word for
a house in French.
It's like a cottage industry over there, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to see this. And I want people to understand that we saw this, not a massive place, but it can do many tons of sorting, crushing, and sorting of different minerals, whether they be tantalum, whether it be tin, because everyone kept using another name, which obviously is the main mineral, but actually becomes tin. So for us stupid people, it's tin whenever you hear some of these things. And I see that if this was the only thing you did and focused on, based on the numbers that we were talking about and that we were able to generate from these now 40 artisanal miners that you have gathered a lot of information on and how they mine and how they go about things, that Aterion itself is probably undervalued just on this part of the company, based on the situation. Now, we went to the artisanal mine and mining sites, and one of the things that I was very happy about was that Aterion are going there with the positive view to help these miners become better miners, whether it's by equipment, whether it's by geological knowledge, whether it's by safety, and maybe safety is one of the big things. So how do you see this progressing, Charles? I mean, if it was the only thing you had to focus on, which it isn't quite obviously, but if it was the only thing you had to focus on, where will this situation be in 12, 24 months' time?
Yeah, ideally, we will have several of those 40 signed up in relatively long-term partnerships where they are supplying us with mineral ore, cassiterite, which is what turns into tin, and coltan, and where we are helping them increase production. And in doing so, we both are sharing those margins. And as part of that, making sure from an ESG standpoint, those benefits are flowing through into the communities so that they're safer working environments and higher margin working environments so that the corresponding economic development happens. And from our standpoint, the margins translate into profit. You know, we are not a charity. We're not trying to pretend to be one. We are looking out for shareholders' interest. And for us, if we had 10 of these different entities on board providing good supplies, and then us having on the other side of that three or four good offtakes, that would be ideal. And that's the objective over the next 12 months.
And the economics behind that is going to be that this will create you several million dollars of profit per annum.
That's the potential. A lot of this depends on how the underlying price is with these ores. As the price increases, generally the margins increase. So depending on how global markets move with commodity pricing. What we're trying to do with the 10 different artisanal entities is to have approximately, let's say, 1 ton per week of production. So that's 50 tons per annum times 10. So that's 500 tons. If we are able to have $1,000 on each ton, that's $500,000. That's cassiterite, and that's the lower priced ore, whereas coltan is about five times that. We wouldn't expect the same volumes, but you can expect the same sort of margin percentage. So we are getting into millions of dollars of margin per annum. Yes.
Okay, very good. So we visited these artisanal mines and it was an eye opener. And I have to say, I was watching my feet just in case I fell down a hole at any point. But, you know, there is a massive ability, I think, to improve that. And then if we move on, we went to see Rio Tinto actually the next day before we then visited HCK1. Now, I can say as a bystander, if you like, as an investor, we went in to see Tim Fletcher and Sandy Walker, who are the country people, if you like, in Rwanda, into their brand new office because this is the first event for them moving into Rwanda. It's quite obvious that they're very keen. They haven't moved into Rwanda just for HCK1, though this is their first project. They've moved into Rwanda because they see the mineral potential, I think, within the country. And, you know, they are very keen and going full steam ahead. This is no, we have to wait for these results before we decide we're going to do this, this, and this. You know, they're drilling next year, and in the meantime, they're going to find out where they're going to drill. So what was your impression of that, Charles?
I think you nailed it. I think not only are they good, responsible partners, as I mentioned, but they are committed. So they are actively examining both the landscape and that from every different perspective. So from the regulatory perspective, getting a good understanding of what's necessary, making sure their employees have housing, making sure their employees have a good working environment, whether that's on site or back at their office. And it shows they're really committed to understanding the potential for Rwanda. We obviously believe in that potential. We obviously try to convey our positive perspective and optimistic outlook on the potential for lithium in the country to them. I think they understand that.
And from your perspective, Simon, obviously this came about in the first place, I think, because of your friendship or knowledge of Tim Fletcher. So do you want to tell us a bit about how it all came about?
It's quite interesting, yeah. So we first had contact with Rio just over a year ago. And really, they were initially talking to us about the Moroccan assets and the copper. But because at the time we were sort of busy going through the transaction, they said, okay, well, look, let's take a look at your other projects in Rwanda. So Tim and another geologist came down and we spent a couple of days wandering around the hills, showing them what we've got on the ground. And I think it's just sort of snowballed from there. So, you know, their initial focus was Morocco, but it's just definitely all about Rwanda at the moment for Rio and our relationship with them. And, you know, as Charles said, and you've seen on the ground, they're very proactive. They're getting busy. They're throwing a lot of resources at the projects. And that's ideal for a company like ours to be the sort of almost like the silent partner in it.
We met Sandy and Tim as well, as Kev just alluded to, their new offices. And we also met Alice, the geologist at the site of HCK1 as well, which was, she showed us around, and it was great to see all the mineralization. And we walked up the hillside there, or mountainside, however you want to refer to it. But we obviously tried to ask, I think, Sandy for a statement, for an audio recording, but obviously he declined. But since then, we actually got a written statement from Sandy Walker, program manager for Rwanda Rio Tinto Exploration. And he said, Rio Tinto is pleased to be in Rwanda exploring for lithium and to have partnered with Aterian through the Kinunga JV on our first project. Exploration activities are now safely underway, and we look forward to seeing the results of the data currently being collected. We appreciate the support of the government of Rwanda and look forward to continuing our work here. So very positive words from Sandy there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's reflected in their ambitions for the country. And, you know, the beauty of this is that it's it's going to promote the country as a destination. So you're going to start to see other explorers coming in and looking for this lithium opportunity. And you know, the view that we take is that we would welcome other companies coming into the country because it elevates Rwanda as a mining destination. And any mineral exploration success, whether it be ours or another company's, is just a positive because it just reinforces what we've always believed from the start of operations in country. Absolutely.
Simon, give us your geological perspective on HCK1.
We did quite a bit of preliminary test work on that target. It's just one of 18 targets on the license. And I'm kind of hoping that with Rio Tinto and their sort of advanced exploration data packages that they have, that they may be identifying more targets. But HCK1, as you've seen now, because you've been on the ground, you know, photographs can never do it justice. It's such a prominent target that sits in the landscape down in the south. You know, we've traced it out over a couple of kilometers, and in places it can be quite wide. But as we push forwards, or as Rio pushes forwards now with the exploration and moves on to the drilling phase, we'll start to understand it more in detail in terms of what the minerals are, what the main, and by that it's really what are the main lithium minerals, you know. You know, I think the spodumene on surface has been seen as relic crystals because it's all been leached out. But it's once you get down into that bedrock that you'll find the true lithium potential of this particular target. And I think that's true of all the pegmatites that you see in Rwanda. You know, you're not going to see lithium, or you're just going to see very low levels of trace lithium in the upper layers, which are weathered. And, you know, the weathering can go down to 40 to 60 meters in places. But being a soluble metal, it's being leached out, and we think it's residual in that fresh bedrock. And that's really the target for companies like Rio and ourselves when we look at the lithium opportunity in Rwanda. And, you know, I think we've spoken about it in the past on previous podcasts that the lithium being in the bedrock is what's always been overlooked as the key commodity in these particular deposits in Rwanda. The historical past has always been, as you've seen, when you went to the artisanal mining operations, it's just focusing on the soft, easy-to-dig material, which hosts the tantalum, niobium, coltan mineralization and cassiterite. And I think the country is about to change in terms of a mineral destination.
Very good. One thing to add is, as Simon mentioned, we're dealing with a pegmatite swarm. And what I sometimes get frustrated by it with respect to the market is we're very excited about HCK1. We think HCK1 in and of itself is a phenomenal asset, prospective asset, I should say, for a company our size. But given there's an additional 18 targets and perhaps even more, it's very, very exciting. And the potential is something I think that's just not being appreciated by the market.
Yeah, and I think they were busy mapping their own, as you alluded to, Simon, their own little, because you identified something like 19 pegmatite zones, but they were already looking at other areas when we were there. So it was interesting to see them looking at your areas, but also potentially other zones.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just through a process of reinterpreting some of the geochemistry, seeing how the metal associations allow you to vector into new target zones and some geophysics that they're running across the top of the project. So yeah, I'm very hopeful that they will find more.
Yeah. I know obviously Rio also has the option to add Eterians to other Rwandan projects, pending obviously license approval, I believe.
Yep, that's correct. So we've got, there's a block adjacent to HCK, which is being renewed. And there's the Masasa license, which is up towards Lake Kivu in the northwest part of the country. We're hopeful that that will come through the renewal before the end of the year. And yeah, the licenses tend to be quite small in Rwanda. So it's 400 hectares, which is not particularly large. But yet, you know, we know from basic traversing and prospecting over the region and having spent a little bit of time working down on a small scale license with our former partners at Kwaka, that there is opportunity there. There are indications that there will be pegmatites on the ground. Now it's up to Rio when they take over to delineate those and then also identify what the mineralization is within those particular bodies.
And there was some interesting stuff happening in the mining board while we were there as well. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that, Charles?
Yeah, the Rwandan mining board revoked 13 different licenses, and this was from various companies that they had judged had not been living up to their responsibilities. And those responsibilities can include, let's say, reporting
exploration, environmental cleanup, and or preventing illegal mining. There's various obligations as a responsible mining company that we all have to live up to. What's interesting about this is that as a result, what we believe is that it's going to mean that the level of professionalism is going to increase in the country, and we're going to see newer, more modern mining companies take the place of those who've had their licenses suspended or removed. So,
and is one of those companies Ethereum?
We hope so very much, yes. We would love to participate in the process of obtaining more licenses, and it's part of our plan.
So you indicated that to the chairman of the mining board?
We indicated that we would like to apply for all 13 of the licenses. We'll see what we actually do and what we get in the end, but we're hopeful.
Okay. And this obviously needs to happen pretty fast. Otherwise, artisanal mining will move in on these licenses, I would imagine, just for people to try and make a quick...
Yeah. Yeah. Our illegal mining would move in. And
yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean, Ren.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what we need to do is to make sure that there's a good steward on these licenses who can do the proper exploration, make sure people are safe, and if there's actual exploitation opportunity to do it properly and productively to maximize the production and the tax revenues for the government and all the stakeholders.
Very good. So if that's not enough, we've talked about Rwanda, we've talked about the trading side of Ethereum, and unfortunately Simon wasn't with us in Rwanda because he was in Morocco with the 3 million licenses that you hold in Morocco. How many licenses do you hold?
Well, it's 60 permits that cover 17 projects. So, you know, it is a lot of ground to cover. So we have our core projects in the Western Anti-Atlas. So I was out for about 10 days with the field teams visiting some of the projects just to look to see how we can progress in advance. So I was down at Agdes, which is the sort of hydrothermal structurally controlled copper silver deposit. And then we're trying to build the model there and pull it all together, all the data that was done historically in the past. So there's over 700 samples on the ground. There's been various phases of geophysics, a lot of mapping. Some university sort of MSc work has been done on it by some students from Camborne. And it's just trying to pull the data together to have a clear understanding of what we're standing on, and see if we can in the new year get some sort of scout holes drilled into the start to give us a bit of three dimension onto the project. So yeah, it's very encouraging. You know, there's a lot of copper out there, but we just need to understand how it all hangs together and, you know, what the continuity is like. But then we were down in the western part of the Anti-Atlas, so visiting the Tata project and the Azra project. Tata, we put out a press release a couple of weeks back on some sampling that had been done down there. So we had up to 7% copper out of a grab sample. You know, we've covered about 18 kilometers strike of this sedimentary hosted copper deposit, shall I say. And we've still got about 25 kilometers still to go. But on this particular trip, we weren't so much focused on following out a single unit where there is copper, because we know the mineralization is there and it's quite extensive. We kind of took a geological step backwards, and more recently the field teams have been focused on cross-traversing the sedimentary stratigraphy to just understand the causes and effects of the copper mineralization, because being a sedimentary copper play, these are sort of hosted in sediments which formed in ancient basins. And it's just trying to do a little bit of work to understand what was the source of the copper, how were these basins formed, what was the potential geometry or architecture of the basins, you know, because that's quite important. And we're going to be working on that over the next couple of months so that we can sort of get a clear understanding of the opportunity for these particular projects. But, you know, the early indications are very, very positive. So one of the things we're looking for is below the mineralization is the so-called red beds. These are sort of oxidized sedimentary units, which typically could be the host for the copper in the first place, or the source rather, not the host, the source of the copper. You know, as these basins formed and sort of subsided and collapsed, the lithification of these rocks with water passing through it and brines forming would have leached out any copper that was found within those units, and then sort of transported it up the sedimentary package and then deposited it out into the layers that we see today that hosts the copper. So it was a really interesting trip, and there's lots to chew on, but you know, we're ticking a lot of the boxes that we believe will sort of point us in the right direction for hopefully future finds of the sedimentary copper.
Yes, it sounds like you're having a geologist party.
it was quite a bit of rock chat going on.
They were rocking the rocks.
Yeah.
Oh, not that sort of rock and roll.
Yeah. Exactly. But, you know, it was fun getting out there. The weather at this time of the year in Morocco is fantastic. And, you know, traveling around the country is an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, not too hot, not too cold. It's a beautiful time of the year, isn't it? Indeed. So if you are a betting man, then there is definitely copper there, copper, silver. And, you know, based on the size of this strike length, you know, we would assume that there's going to be a fairly large quantity.
Well, that's what we're hoping for. And, you know, we'll just continue the process. You know, you've got to go through the steps. You can't short circuit the whole process to find an economic discovery. But we're firmly on the road, and every phase of exploration that we do out there, we're just building up the knowledge and the understanding so that we can make sure that when we start to target particular areas of the basin, we are in the right location, and that's the key.
Yeah, and I think we're running on two tracks here with the Ethereum, because there is absolutely no doubt in my mind, having listened to the Rio guys, that it's full steam ahead in Rwanda in terms of the lithium. This is not going to be a long game. You know, they're not going to be drawing this out for years and years. Maybe it will take them that long to get it out the ground, but ultimately to make a decision that there is this much of a JORC resource, I presume is how it will be looked at in terms of the lithium, is not probably much more than a year or a year and a half away, in my view anyway. I mean, do you think I'm like dreaming in that respect, or is that realistic time to?
No,
when we spoke to Alice, she was non-committal, obviously, shock horror. She's from Rio Tinto, but she doesn't want to say too much because she's got to be proved to be there first, obviously.
No, you're right. Look, I mean, I think you're right in your sort of assumptions on the timeline, because if they're going to start drilling next year, and we don't know at the moment because we haven't had those discussions as to what the drill density is going to be and what they're going to be targeting, but they're going to throw a lot of drill meters at the projects. And certainly, if they are intersecting the sort of spodumene lithium in the bedrock, and they can hinge or put together a couple of sections, and you've got a couple of holes on each section line, very quickly they can start to build a resource up. So, yeah, I think, you know, in a year's time, we could be having a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they were openly saying, without giving the numbers, that it was tens of thousands of meters that they were going to drill next year. So, you know, this is not a cheap process, and they're not going to drill that much unless they think geologically they've got a very high probability it's there, because it's going to cost them millions of dollars.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to drill without the assumption that there's going to be something to intersect. And you know, they do have a number of targets there. Like, you know, we said earlier on in the chat that, you know, there's 18 targets that have been delineated by us through our work, and I'm sure they're going to find more on the ground, because, you know, these things do occur in swarms. So there'll be plenty more pegmatite targets for them to drill on the license. But, you know, they've got the HCK1 target, which I think is pretty substantial. But who's to say with additional prospecting and scientific work that they throw at this project that there isn't another HCK1 equivalent sitting on the license? There could be more. But, you know, it's wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Charles, give us the famous last words.
Oh, it was great to have you guys. And I think the gorillas will never be the same.
Scarred and polite.
Okay, as we're on the Sunday roast, we have to ask you the question, what is the worst and best advice you've ever received? I think maybe we've asked you this before, but we're going to ask you again.
The best advice?
Yeah.
Don't do podcasts.
And the worst advice?
The worst advice, do podcasts.
The best advice.
Why don't you ask something simple, like what's for lunch?
Yeah.
Charles?
In terms of best advice, you did ask this before, and it was from a former boss of mine, and just getting a good understanding of what you're doing. That's what I was trying to relay. In terms of worst advice, it was there's one restaurant that I will not mention, and that was recommended to me, and trust me, that was the worst thing that happened.
Yes, indeed. I shouldn't have eaten all that salad at the chicken burger on the second day in Rwanda. That was my
We got too much information on that one everyday report, so don't go there again. Charles Bray and Simon Robertson, thanks very much for your time. And also, again, thanks very much for your excellent hospitality on the trip.
Yeah. Thank you, guys, for the hospitality. And all I'd say to investors is have a good look at this, because there is huge potential upside. And from what we've seen on the ground, people are not doing this just to make a few dollars. This is hopefully going to be a big deal in the future.
On to our second guest this week. We're joined by Sean Day, MD of Greatland Gold. Welcome back, Sean.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Phil. Thanks very much for having me on the program again.
You're more than welcome. So Greatland Gold began diamond core drilling on the Meadows Gold Prospect within the Ernest Giles project in Western Australia, following the Ernest Giles land access agreement in September 2023. The company successfully completed heritage surveys and quickly mobilized to the site. The initial two diamond holes, co-funded by the Western Australian Government's Exploration Incentive Scheme, aimed to test interpreted mineralized zones. This drilling will build upon previous exploration and provide vital data for a comprehensive reverse circulation drill program planned for 2024. Great to see things progressing.
Yeah, no, we're really pleased. You talked about the timeframes then. Look, it's been a bit of a slow burn to get that access agreement, albeit after about 4 or 5 years, we're able to successfully achieve that. We then needed to get the heritage clearance, which was also successfully completed. And then mobilizing a rig at short notice is not without its challenges as well. So I think the team, both the heritage and the geological team we have done a tremendous job to do that safely and efficiently and effectively in the timeframe available. And we expect in time to be able to access that West Australian Government EIS co-funding, which you mentioned.
So it seems that you really did get a bit of a shift on from September to now to be sticking the drill in the ground already. Is pretty awesome in terms of most mining projects.
Yeah, absolutely. We did get a move on, and that included engaging with a number of drilling companies to see who could mobilize a rig at short notice. And also remember, the rigs that typically, and in this case, were already engaged, and sometimes those programs can run over time. And just as we'd expect a drilling company, we had their rig on site, but we needed some extra time to accommodate that. That can happen, which can throw some unexpected challenges. So really, until we had a rig on site, we couldn't be certain that we would achieve that time frame, because it was a very congested and busy kind of period to get this all done in time. But as I said, a great shout out to the team to have done that and have the rig spinning kind of ahead of mid-November.
Okay, so Sean, tell us a little bit about these holes. There's only two holes. Are they going in diagonally? Are they going in straight down? Are they in different parts of the area? What's the situation?
Yeah, no, so look, they're diagonal holes. What's really unique about these or distinguishes them from some drilling some time ago is that these diamond drilling, so we'll extract core, we'll understand the stratigraphy of Ernest Giles. So this is, I think, give us a more complete understanding of the structures there. So we're really excited to do that. That's part of the EIS mandate, is to have a core record, which we share with the West Australian Government. So this is a next logical step in terms of our understanding of the system. And we're really grateful for the support of the West Australian Government. It's a great jurisdiction to be an explorer or a mining company in. And this is one of the mechanisms that they do to have to support the sector, which contributes so much to the state of Western Australia.
So they will basically pay because it's the first drills that you're doing on this land. It's not, they're going to partner with you through the whole thing, I presume.
Yeah, you're correct. It's encourage kind of new exploration, new understanding of areas. So they're not going to be a partner for the whole program, but what a delightful way to start off with this co-funding, and it has certainly accelerated and, you know, made us commit to that diamond drilling early. So it's kind of done what it's intended to do. And I think that creates an understanding of this Ernest Giles area, which is a new Archean greenstone, wasn't understood to be a Archean greenstone historically. So this is really opening up a new frontier for exploration in Western Australia.
Very good. And you've managed to add probably 100 million to your market cap in the last month or so. So that must feel quite good. How's it all going? Have you met the new partners yet, or are we still waiting for that?
Yeah, look, we're really kind of pleased with the initial engagement with Newmont. Yeah, they're an incredibly capable and polished team. So we've enjoyed the early days of establishing that relationship. There's a series of meetings, as you can imagine, as we kind of build up the depth of that relationship across geology, across management in Australia, up to the States. It's multifaceted, but we're potentially, really long-term partners together. Havieron is a multi-decade ore body. So this is a relationship that I think, both groups, really want to see established well, off to a good start, and optimize the success of the Telfer Havieron project.
Yeah, very good. And obviously some value is coming out of that now, with people realizing that there is a lot of inherent value within Greatland. And today's announcement really just enhances that, I suppose.
Yeah, look, I think if I answer that in two parts. Firstly, we've continued to add institutional engagement to complement engagement with kind of the existing kind of retail base. That just continues to yield results. And we have more and more institutional buying on the share register. We've seen some of that recently. And as I've articulated before, what we see is institutions being a new source of demand, and also a source of demand that creates stability in the share prices. They're more inclined to add to their positions on any kind of pullback. So I think that's been really positive, and it's good to see that strategy of broadening our shareholder base starting to bear fruit. In addition, we talked about today's announcement in terms of getting on to Ernest Giles. It really opens up a whole second front of exploration optionality within our portfolio. I've always had no secret that Ernest Giles outside the Paterson is really the prize for me. So no one's more excited in the organization, maybe some of the resource geologists, but than me at the prospect of starting to drill Ernest Giles.
Very good. Well, continue on the good work, and we look forward to speaking to you in the not too distant.
Look, really appreciate you having me on the program again. Enjoy being on the Sunday Roast. So thanks very much.
Sean Day, MD of Greatland Gold, thanks very much for your time.
Cheers, Sean.
Well, that's certainly two interesting companies, isn't it, that we've just heard from. I mean, should we move on to this week's movers and shakers?
Yeah, I think you should just go back and see what sort of performance Greatland Gold have had, though, because we interviewed Sean in detail, about 30, 40 days ago, and what has happened to that share price in that time.
It's done 80%, that's what's happened to it.
80%, which for a company with a huge market cap already of 200 or 300 million is quite a move, isn't it? And I don't think it's finished yet either. I think it's still got a lot of value to add, I think, in terms of where it's going. So yeah, interesting just to see what Sean's talking about. And there's a lot more going on than just the big gold play that they've got, in the past and that. So yeah, very interesting.
So let's move on then to other movers in the last this last week, last 5 days trading. We had a good RNS from Ondo InsurTech. And again, I think they've done a good 50, 60% in the last 5 days. Basically, they announced a partnership with Nationwide, who are a Fortune 100 insurance and financial services company. The collaboration involves integrating Ondo's LeakBot, a water damage prevention system, into Nationwide's smart home program for U.S. homeowners insurance customers. Nationwide, the eighth largest homeowner insurer in the U.S., aims to address a significant protection gap, as revealed by their agency Forward survey, where less than 10% of homeowners use smart sensors for water leak monitoring despite the high incidence of water damage claims. The first state launch of LeakBot under this program is planned for early 2024, with details to be announced later and intentions to expand to additional states thereafter. The initiative is expected to significantly reduce preventable water damage, which on average cost over $12,000 per claim, providing customers with greater security and peace of mind. Yeah, so that was good to see that one. I mean, it dropped back from the sort of mid-30s, didn't it, to the 20s, but it's definitely, you know, back in the 30 zone now.
Yeah, and when we interviewed them, you know, that was 5 or 6p. That was this year.
Yeah.
So that's been a hell of a move. It must be one of the top movers for the year, I think. And a very simple idea that's going to roll out, save insurance companies a huge amount of money, and make Ondo a huge amount of money. I don't think there's any doubt that company's going places. I think it's just going to be on the roll. So even at this price now, I think it's a good deal.
Another good one this week was Alchemy Capital Investments. We've talked about them before when they were down in the sort of like 70, 80p range, and they did drop back a bit, but I think they've moved back into the kind of like the, you know, the 120, 130 range. Basically, their 100% subsidiary, Tees Valley Lithium, has secured a vital lithium supply agreement with Wolgen Resources, which will bolster its plans to establish a merchant lithium refinery in the UK. They reached an agreement with Wolgen to supply up to 20,000 tons of technical grade lithium carbonate annually for 5 years. Obviously, this supply is critical for the first train of TVL's proposed refinery at Wilton International Chemical Park in Teesside, Freeport. So good to see them actually getting this, you know, vital lithium supply agreement in place.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, this stock hinges on getting the finance. If it gets the finance, then I think going to be one hell of a business, and it's going to be a huge business, and that's really where it all hinges, and that's why the price is where it is, because it doesn't have the finance in place. If it does, it's going to be many factors of where it is now. Yeah, I suppose
it reminds me a little bit of the British Volt scenario, that they had everything in place, they had the site, but they didn't have the funding, did they? And then when that was pulled, unfortunately, when it went into administration, so that there is a risk there for sure, isn't there? The funding is the best. It's like anything, isn't it? If you can't get the funding, what will happen? And you know, even Glencore were investing into the British Volt project, but it just wasn't enough, was it, when the British government effectively would not help them out. And then you had all that was at the Andrew Forrest was going to go in, was going to buy them and save them, but again that deal fell through. So let's hope that they can get the funding in place and announced, and you know, get everything underway, get the lithium going, and get the trains rolling.
Yep. What else was happening this week then?
We had
Shale from Shale Brownstone.
Yeah. So would you want to, well, I'll read through it quickly and then you can add a bit onto it. So basically they announced a significant milestone in the distribution efforts. They secured an initial order for Chill Zero nicotine-free vape product from Flawless, the UK's largest category-specific distributor in the vaping industry. This agreement positions Chill Brown's products to be marketed and sold through Flawless, which has a substantial reach, supplying over 5,000 wholesale accounts and maintaining a customer base of over 50,000. It's expected to greatly enhance the visibility of Chill Brands in the market, leveraging Flawless's extensive distribution platform to reach thousands of businesses and retail customers. Callum Summerton, CEO of Chill, expressed excitement about this development, viewing it as a strong endorsement of their Chill Zero range and an opportunity to establish a significant presence in the competitive vape market.
Yeah, I mean, the reality of the situation here with Chill is it's getting out there. Chill Zero is getting into the market. They're going to sell a lot of vapes. They've sold to WH Smith's already. That's going to, you know, they're going to be in the stores in the next number of weeks. Yeah, I think people are waiting for the prospectus to come out to issue these shares at 2p. And thinking that the price is going to crash because of it. But you got to look at the whole situation now. Chill is a different animal. And I think an awful lot of people will have sold the shares that they are going to get from their existing shares already at a very handsome profit. So I'm not so sure. I mean, I think we might have a mini dip. And if we do, it'll be bought up extremely quickly, I think, because people are going to be looking at it. Well, that's the last thing that was holding things back. So I think we're going to have an exciting time over the next sort of 6 to 8 to 12 weeks with Chill.
and all the things that are likely to come with the different partners that can come because of all the connections that Callum's managed to facilitate over the last period of time. So yeah, I think people should start taking a serious look, because the valuation in terms of this being a company that sells vapes and also has the chill.com marketplace, which is expanding every week, basically, in terms of the products it has. You know, you should take a close look at this, because I think you're going to see a very, very different animal going forward. One that is cash flow positive, one that will then be able to build upon itself, which will be something to behold. And the growth will be, I think, exceptional in my view.
The ongoing saga of Horizonte Minerals continues. We saw another announcement this week. This is one, remember, that's dropped some 90% from its highs. And then there was another 50% drop from those previous levels this week. They basically are facing challenges with the Aragua Nickel Project. And despite ongoing efforts, the company is struggling to secure a robust financing solution, having announced this issue previously on the 2nd of October. To conserve resources and funds, Horizonte has decided to scale back construction activities at Aragua, limiting itself to only essential work streams. As of November the 10th, the project's total liquidity stood at $169 million, but this is only expected to cover working capital until mid-December 2023, unless new financing solutions or cost-saving measures are successfully implemented. So the company is there teetering on the edge. Its situation appears precarious as it hinges on positive outcomes from ongoing discussions with suppliers and lenders, with the objective of securing sufficient working capital until late Q1 2024. Site visits and due diligence by key shareholders and lenders are underway, with funding decisions expected in early Q1 2024. I mean, what I would say on this is, if they do secure this funding, can you imagine the mother of all bounce backs in the share price?
Yeah,
I think you'd hope.
But I think you're betting on black and red here. I'm sorry. It's either... And the thing is, if it comes up red and you're on red, it's not going to be one times that you make. It's going to be 10, 20 times, I think, at least. If you bet on and it comes up black, then you're going to have 100% loss in my view. I think that's the decision you've got to make. You know, yeah, it's going to wipe shareholders out.
Do you think it really is as simple as a casino move, red or black on this one?
I think it is now, yes. I mean, they're either going to get the money or they're not going to get the money. I mean, is Alchemy the same? I think it is. You know, only it hasn't had a problem, if you like, whereas Horizonte Minerals has a lot of money ready to build a project. And, you know, now it needs significantly more. The bankers are either going to say, well, what's the best way for us to get our money back here? Well, okay, let's wipe the shareholders out. Someone buy the project with the debt.
Yes, it's been interesting chat. So, okay, then let's move on to Conroy Gold. Obviously, our guest last week, we did the site visit in Dublin, and they have moved up a good 30, 35% on the week, haven't they? So it's been nice to see, actually. I mean, how it was beaten down. I mean, 11p was ridiculous, wasn't it? I mean, now even 14.5p is ridiculous. It should be back into the 20s, 30s, 40s that we saw when the JV was announced.
Yeah, it's only just begun, really. I think any sort of bounce back, any sort of buy. I mean, we saw it on Friday. I don't think there was big volume on Friday, and it still was up 5 or 6%, 7%, you know, because if you want to come in and buy 500,000 shares in Conroy, you're probably going to have to pay 20p now, in my view.
Do you think the difficulty in being able to buy it is a problem? Because obviously, you know, we've seen it before when you try and buy, or people have said to us, oh, I can't buy it. Bro, been on to the broker, he said it's impossible, he's given up, or, you know, they go to negotiated trade.
Yeah, you've got to go to negotiate trade with Conroy. So if you've got to buy and you want a position, please don't be put off by the fact that they won't offer you the shares. You just got to go for negotiated buy, or I'll buy at this price and no more.
Yeah, Mark.
You know, but market best isn't going to work, because it doesn't work on the systems because there's so little stock. So if you want it, go in and say, I'm willing to pay up to 15p or whatever it happens to be at the minute when you get to it, and say, I want this many stock at this price, and you'll probably get it. But just waiting for it to be available, it's not going to happen. Yeah. So I expect that to go on a run from now on. I think we'll get some news in the coming weeks, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think the story's only just begun. We did say that 2 years ago, but this is now real, I think, you know. I think there's been a lot of drilling
done by Demir, and we're going to get some results. And then I think the really big catalyst will be them saying, right, we're going to stage two. I think at that point, people will know for sure it's there, and the value will have to come. And then I think we're talking not pence, we're talking pounds. So yeah.
Okay.
The other one that had a very good, a very, very good RNS was Celadon. £8.7 million of revenue per annum, £26 million over a three-year term in selling the cannabis flowers. Yeah, what's not to like? I mean, when you look at the market capitalization of that, this basically looks after the market capitalization in one deal.
Yeah, so that was a really good agreement. I mean, 26 million, as you say, over 3 years, 8.7 million annually.
And I don't think it's the last one either, because I mean, I went to this place, just so you know, I went to sell at the Celadon factory, if you like, that they've now done out to produce these cannabinoid flowers. And it is state of the art and massive rooms, massive growing areas. They're all inside, all by light.
Hydroponic.
And electricity and hydroponics, as you say. You know, it is amazing. And this place is producing top quality, not being influenced by any outside forces, so that it can be used for medical cannabis. And I think that's the important thing. It's not your man in the council flat who's basically taped up all the windows and decided to put the lights on all the time and grow his cannabis. No, this is what we will expect in the future from a cannabis supplier for the medical industry for all sorts of different things. So
we had a good chat with Jim this week, and he's going to be on the podcast coming in the following week. So next week, look out for a podcast with Jim for sure, talking about that contract.
Yeah, and he can't tell us, but he's very positive that there's, you know, he's negotiating with others as well. So, you know, it's one to look out for, I think, because I think it's not the end of this, you know.
Yeah, and another one that needs a mention is First Class Metals, who had a good RNS on Tuesday. UK-based metals exploration company provided a promising update on the Sunbeam Pass producing high-grade gold mine within its extensive Canadian Schreiber, Hemlode, Sunbeam and Zigzag land holdings. The key highlights included the receipt of initial results from the Roy prospect, featuring a notable gold grade of 18.8 grams per tonne from a 0.3-metre channel sample, the strategic expansion of the Sunbeam property by an additional 25 square kilometres through stacking of 119 contiguous claims, bringing the total coverage to 72 square kilometres and encompassing significant district scale structures. So great news. We spoke to Mark and James, Jim.
That's right. We spoke to them while we were in Rwanda.
And they were so excited about it. So we're going to catch up with them in a couple of weeks, and they also get them back on the podcast to talk about their Canadian assets. Very exciting one for that one.
Yeah, good. So finally, I think we'll call it, what's your thoughts on MAST?
Yeah, so obviously MAST had an announcement this week, didn't they? Which basically we've been waiting on. It was the update on the JV venture agreement with Proventure. I mean, initially, Proventure was required to make an interim payment of £2 million by the 10th of November. But obviously that date passed, and due to administrative and banking delays in the RNS, the payment is still pending. Consequently, MED has extended the deadline for this payment to between the 15th and 30th of November. Proventure will incur a late payment penalty of £3,000 per day from the 11th of November until the full payment is made, which is due by the long stop date of the 30th of November. However, if the payment is made by the 15th, MED will waive the incurred penalties. Despite this extension, the completion of the JVA and the payment of the remaining investment of around £3.9 million is still anticipated by 30th of November. What do you make of it? I mean, is it a case of the MED have said, well, we're going to have to put this payment on just to show that you are obviously willing to do that? I mean, what is the reasoning behind incurring a late payment?
Hurry them along, I think. I think we just got to keep our fingers crossed that Peter has worked very hard, I think, to get that done and get it over the line. So let's hope it is just administration and the money comes in. Because the money comes in, absolute game changer. Game changer.
Yeah.
Completely, you know, so... Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've talked long enough. It's probably about an hour and a half this week, no doubt, with the two interviews and our post and preamble. Anything else you want to add, really, at the end of it? I mean, what a great week it's been. Tired back into the swing of things now, both back home. And, yeah.
See what tomorrow brings, what happens in the market. Yeah, let's see what where we get a move up to the end of the year as the dollar starts to fall and interest rates are looking like the peak.
Inflation rates are down 2%.
Inflation rates have come down. All the things are starting now, that the things that were worrying economists and people are starting to subdue. Does that mean the markets are going to start looking ahead and start rallying? I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, I hope Santa's got his suit on and is ready to go shortly.
Santa rally and all that. Yeah. So a big shout out goes to the team at TA Luxury Safaris, Emmanuel and Samuel. Samuel was a driver and Emmanuel was the representative of owner of TA Luxury Safaris, and they were brilliant. They drove us up to the Volcanoes National Park and we stopped off for coffee, etc. And obviously got all the permits for us to visit these mountain gorillas, which is not an easy task because obviously there's a certain number that they're allocated for each day. But what a service. If you are thinking about doing this trip, going to Rwanda, and you want to visit the mountain gorillas, then look no further than TA Luxury Safaris. So that's taluxurysafaris.com. Okay, well, on that note, I think, yeah, we'll just say thanks for listening. If you like what you've heard, and we're glad to be able to bring you this sort of podcast where it's a kind of, hopefully you feel like you've been along for part of the journey. Obviously, the Conroy visit last week, we had a lot of comments saying it sounded so real. You could hear us moving along the ground when we're out on site. We're doing these little audio clips. It almost gives you that feeling of being there, realism, really. And actually what we're seeing is seeing these sites firsthand, so shareholders can kind of understand. Because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it doesn't even exist, there's no gold there, or, you know, that operation doesn't exist. Well, we're seeing it firsthand and we can say for sure that it does exist. So ultimately, yeah, thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, please hit the subscribe button and then hit the bell icon so you receive any future notifications for further episodes.
Yep, thanks a lot, guys.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.